For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch. Up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
Let's open up that rave bar! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is going to do the same thing again year after year. Oh, no!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rant of Troy Radio, episode 415, coming to you on Thursday, September 9th, looking forward to USC's game against the Stanford Cardinal at the Coliseum, 7:30 p.m. It's Pac-12 After Dark, the Trojans and the Cardinals reuniting their rivalry after a year off. We're going to preview the game and so much more here on this episode. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at RantOfTroy, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/RantOfTroy. Be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, Google Play. Wherever you can find a podcast, we are there. I'm your host, Meyer Castillo. Join along with my co-host, Alicia D'Artola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. It is a big week. It is the beginning of the Pac-12 season.
As usual in week two, which...
Yeah, with Stanford.
With Stanford, as always.
As always, which I'm really interested to know what's going to happen when the alliance comes to fruition. And the Pac-12 ends up going down to... hypothetically, down to eight games, is the Stanford rivalry no longer going to be in week two? I don't know.
I mean, it would make sense. So the part of the reason why USC and Stanford always end up playing in week two is because USC and Stanford always end up playing Notre Dame not in week two.
Right.
So, like, the more out-of-conference matchups that everyone in the Pac-12 has potentially sprinkled throughout the latter part of the season, the less pigeonholed the Pac-12 is to force the USC-Stanford game in week two. Also, if you go to eight conference games, you don't play Stanford every year, so it's just going to shake up the entire scheduling model to begin with. So,
I think it's going to depend on what, if they do end up playing every year or not.
Yeah, and when they do end up playing, I don't think it's like guaranteed to be week two anymore.
I don't know. In that point, it might be week three.
Yeah.
Because of the two out-of-conference games that is rumored and all that stuff. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to look at.
Yeah, in 2030, it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
2035.
Well, but you know what's weird? This game, on Saturday, it's September 11th, the 20th anniversary of, obviously, the terrible 9/11 attacks. And the crazy thing is, the first SC game after 9/11 was, what, 10 days later? Was it the 22nd or the 21st? I don't remember. The following Saturday, SC played Stanford. They lost, and after that game, SC did not lose a home game until 2009 against Arizona. But that game was very surreal to be at. Stephen Sample made a speech. President Stephen Sample at the time made a speech. It was, a patriotic moment because of what had happened. The week before had been, USC was on a bye, so they didn't get a canceled game. But, like, it feels very recent to me because of it was cemented in my brain, that moment, and that was 20 years ago.
That's the wild thing for me, that it was 20 years ago. Like, and now I'm reading like pieces about like how teenagers today weren't even alive. And I'm like, what?
Did,
My formative years were
Did I mention on the podcast? I don't think I mentioned on the podcast. I mentioned it to somebody how I was watching some show and they're like, coming up Sunday at 9, an in-depth look at somebody's crusade to put out the story of her daughter who passed away in 9/11. She's been doing this for decades. And I'm like decades? What do you mean decade? Like getting her daughter's story out for decades? Decades?
Yeah. No, literal decades.
And then I had to think about it. It's been decades.
Yeah. Yeah. What? It's trippy. It's weird. But it's just, you know, it makes me feel old. I'm not old, but it makes me feel like it's been two decades since that like life changing, world changing moment. And I'm not sure that people younger than us, like, I think we were on the cusp of understanding
seventh grade. Yeah.
What a monumental moment in the world that was. Like, we were just old enough to like get that this is huge.
Right.
And like people younger than us, I think my brother's generation, he's 3.5 years younger than me. I think he also got it, but in like a bigger, like, you know, like just being afraid of like the world thing. But like, it's weird to think to me that there are people listening to this podcast who are in college right now who don't have a real understanding of like what it was like to live in a world where you had pre 9/11 and then post 9/11. Like, it's just,
yeah. And not even that, but just to remember that Tuesday morning. Yeah.
Oh yeah. That Tuesday morning was insane. And that whole week, like, is burned in my brain. I adopted my dog like 3 or 4 days later. And I just have these like very distinct memories of like that entire week, that whole weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Funnily enough, I mean, at that time I was not into football. I had not transitioned into that phase of my life. So for me, 9/11 and USC, my brain jumps to Boston College. Like, that's the memory that I jump to. The whole playing Boston College, when they were doing the special uniforms to honor the alum who died in the towers.
The red bandana
game. And like, just like going into that game going like, this is like bigger than USC and Boston College, and these dudes are playing out of their minds, and that crowd was out of their, like, that it was weird. It was kind of special being a part of that too, even though it was awful. But like, that's where my brain goes to when I think of USC and 9/11. It's really just like that Boston College game where it was like, yeah. And that was, you know, what year was that? That was
2014.
That was a decade on.
Yeah, a week after SC had just beaten Stanford in the Hillary game.
Yeah.
And here we are.
Here we are.
with another September game. And so, yeah, it's incredible to think that it's been 20 years since that terrible tragedy. Obviously, our hearts go out to anyone that was affected. Obviously, we're all affected mentally, emotionally, all those things. It's wild. And here we are with USC and Stanford playing this week again, fittingly. But to do that awkward thing where we transition from a sad thing to a non-sad thing, even though this is still sad, probably.
I mean, not on the same scope.
Not on the
same scope. Yeah.
We did get a new podcast review over in Apple Podcasts. And Alicia, this one is specifically for you because it is a 1-star review on Apple Podcasts. This comes from Mr. Interval, and it says, overuse of the word like. I tried listening to this podcast after hearing Alicia use the word like or it's like for the 20th time in the first 3 minutes. I had to stop listening.
Well, I apologize, Mr. Interval, for using filler words on occasion. If that's going to turn you off to the podcast, then I can't help you. that's all I can say.
Alicia, like, why would you, like
why
do that?
Would I, like, it's like this guy doesn't even get, like, who I am as a person. Like, it's not, I'm from the valley, thank you very much.
This
literal
is like
valley
what
girl
say. This is like us.
This is, yeah, I don't know.
And I do it too. I'm offended, like, he
yeah
didn't,
that
like,
he didn't
mention
catch you
me.
Yeah, like, like I said, that's the proper use of that word, by the way. I have done a lot of work to try to get rid of my filler words when I'm on the podcast. Sometimes I'm really sharp on it, and sometimes I'm not. It happens. We try not to have those kinds of things.
Would you say you don't like to use the word
like? I don't like to use the word like if I'm processing it. And that's just the way it is. But if that's also going to be the kind of thing that like turns you off from a podcast, I did it just now. If that's going to be the kind of thing that turns you off to a podcast, then I can't help you. And yeah, I'm not going to complain about getting a 1-star review, but I really wish like people understood how reviews work, because I think people don't understand how reviews work. I don't know. That's not a good reason to give me a 1-star.
The podcast sucks because, like,
I mean, that's possible.
Like, it does. Yeah. Because, like, yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Whatever. It is what it is. And again, I can't help.
Like, so, if you are listening and, like, want to, like, review, like, the podcast, so now, you can, like, give us a 5-star review. Like, we'll be forever, like, your best friend over in Apple Podcasts. But, like, if not, that's, like, cool too.
Like.
Yeah. Let's get to the news. Yeah. All right, Alicia, a big nah came through. That would be the nah from the NCAA for Polye Naoteaute. He was trying to transfer to Ohio State and play this year for the Buckeyes. The Buckeyes obviously hosting the Oregon Ducks on Saturday morning at 9 a.m., which will be interesting to watch. But Polye Naoteaute from USC's former linebacker will not be participating. He didn't play in their week one opener against Minnesota either, and will not be playing this season for the Buckeyes.
Yeah, I don't really understand this one. Apparently it's not a question of the one-time transfer rule. So it's not a normal kind of transfer. Apparently there's some other eligibility consideration to take into account. Maybe it's academic, maybe it's.
Well, the one-time transfer thing doesn't technically go into effect next year or something.
Yeah, but they're not denying any right. waivers. And
like JT got it approved last year.
Literally everybody's gotten it approved.
Yeah.
So in order for it to not be approved, there's something else which has not been revealed, but there's a different... This was a denial based on some other eligibility concern. So like, I don't know if it's he was denied immediate eligibility in terms of transferring, it sounds more to me like he was denied eligibility to play at all.
Right.
So, yeah. You know, there are a handful of things that can cause that from a player, and that's clearly what he's gotten wrapped up in. So it's been a weird case with him from the get-go.
That Colorado game feels like so long
ago.
Oh
my gosh, so long
ago. 3 years?
But
it's been 3 years.
Yeah, yeah. Wish him well. He's going to have to go through this fall not playing in games, and maybe we'll see what he does next year.
Not playing in games.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a bummer for him. Hopefully everything works out for the best going forward. And hopefully we'll be able to see him on a field near you at some point. Nick Figueroa, USC's leading sack leader from 2020, is a game time decision against Stanford on Saturday. He had an AC sprain against San Jose State. He told Clay Helton during the game, "I'm going to be available next week." Clay Helton said in his Sunday night conference call, "It'd be day to day, and now it's a game time decision."
Yeah, then the AC sprain, just as a reminder, is a shoulder sprain. Essentially, it's the AC joint in your shoulder. It sounds like Vixa Oto is planning. I think Keely Ure was tweeting about talking to him, and it sounds like Vixa Oto is planning to have him there. It just that he needs to get cleared when it's time to go on Saturday. Yeah. So. I would just expect him to play. But the question always when these guys come back from these kinds of things is he might play. How effective will he be? Will he be hampered by that? That's the question that I think he'll need to answer.
Right. Yeah. The AC joint, not the heater joint. Completely different part of the body. Gary Bryant Jr. and Jacob Lichtenstein are cleared to play, and they should be able to play on Saturday against the Cardinal.
Yeah, Gary Bryant Jr. clearing COVID protocols, also was dealing with a hamstring injury, but Helton said that he had a good week of practice. And Jacob Lichtenstein, I forget which way that one goes, he was hurt during practice, and it sounds like he'll be okay to go. Which is good because USC needs that depth on the defensive line and they need more receiver options, apparently.
Can we talk about SC's geographical roster, by the way? I just realized SC's leading wide receivers are London and Washington, the two most powerful cities in the world. London and Washington.
Yeah.
And they've got a Lichtenstein on the roster.
Yeah. Are there any more? Orlando is
there. There's a Todd Orlando.
There's an Orlando. Yeah. Yeah. It's just one of those things, man.
Does Brock Berlin have a kid and, like, is SC recruiting him? Like, jeez. Wow.
Yeah.
Incredible. IBM should play, but his conditioning is a concern for the Trojans on Saturday.
Yeah, he wasn't able to practice on Tuesday, so I don't know. I have not seen that he has officially cleared COVID protocols. If he is cleared, you would expect him to play. But at the same time, Todd Orlando is out there saying, this is again per Keely Ure, that Kalen Bullock is going to play a lot this week. He's been taking first team reps this week. And so that it will be very interesting to see, do they play it safe with IPM in his return? Do they throw him straight back in? Or, you know, Kalen Bullock performing so well in week one, maybe it gives them the freedom to say, you know what, we don't need to throw you out here, IPM, if you're not up to the conditioning and fully right physically because you've been sitting out for the better part of a week.
Jackson, Mississippi, by the
Jackson,
way.
Jackson, lots of Jackson.
Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Williams,
Drake,
Arizona.
Drake Jackson, too.
Yeah. Jeez, there's a million of them.
It's almost like cities are often named after surnames.
You know, I never thought about that. That's a good point. Ty Orlando says Kalen Bullock is going to play a lot, and that comes from our friend Keely Ure.
Yeah, just touched on that.
Yeah. I'm so distracted by the cities, okay?
I know.
Okay, sorry.
You've got your roster pulled up on your screen. Like, I know what you're doing over there.
All right, let's be real. The biggest news of the week is that tailgating will be allowed on campus, finally, for the first time in 2 years. USC fans are going to be able to enjoy the game walking down Trousdale and having a good time.
Oh, you would.
It is Trousdale. I will not take your Trousdale BS.
Ugh.
It's Trousdale, baby.
Congratulations to everyone who will get to tailgate on campus. I am very jealous because I will not be doing any tailgating on campus, but I will live vicariously through the photos that I expect to see on the Twitters.
Trousdale. It's Trousdale, I'm telling you. All right, let's get into this game preview. USC and Stanford, the Trojans 1-0, the Cardinal 0-1. Stanford lost 24-7 last week against the Kansas State Wildcats in Arlington at Jerry World. Wasn't a good weekend for them. A good week for USC at the end of the day, getting a 30-7 win over San Jose State. The Trojans were 5-1 last year, Stanford 4-2, but those records sort of deceiving for their different way that their seasons went, in part for what it means for this year, because Stanford has lost a bunch of talent. They only returned 55% of their production from last year, which ranks 111th in the country, and currently they sit 90th in SP+. This isn't the Stanford of old. Gone is Walker Little, gone is Davis Mills, gone is Paulson Adebo. Gone is Drew Dalman. Gone is Simi Fehoko, who's the leading receiver. He got 25% of Stanford's catches last year, double the next receiver, which feels a little USC and Drake London-ish.
Yeah, except that USC is going to have, you know, the next blue blood, wide receiver come in and replace. Drake London was replacing Michael Pittman, was replacing Juju Smith-Schuster, was replacing... Marquise Lee was replacing Robert Wood. It's just on and on and on and on. And I don't know that Stanford has a comparable receiver to Simi Fehoko. And I think that's going to be an issue for them. The hard thing to tell here is the team that played Kansas State is going to look slightly different because Tanner McKee is now the quarterback.
Yeah.
They
let's get into that. Let's talk about the quarterback situation. First of all, I just want to pull a disclaimer here. I don't think there is a team I am simultaneously comfortable with and uncomfortable with talking about than Stanford. You know Stanford, you're familiar with Stanford. At the same time, let's be real, deep down in your heart, do you really know Stanford in week two? Because what have we learned from Stanford in week two in the last decade? Absolutely nothing. Because we used to talk about, like, this was the game that would set the tone for the season. This is the game that you circle in the offseason, you get ready for, and all that stuff. The early season tests to prove the mettle of these two teams. And yet we've seen moments like 2015, where Stanford comes off of a loss to Northwestern at 9 a.m. and then they steamroll SC and beat SC twice to go to the Rose Bowl. We've seen years like 2016 where SC looks pretty terrible up at Palo Alto, only to go to the Rose Bowl themselves that year. Like, it's been a yo-yo.
2017, the year when, you know, we were all convinced that this USC team was different.
Yeah, 2017,
that was a lie. Ever since 2017, the problem with Stanford is that Stanford has experienced a significant drop off defensively, I think.
Yes.
I think that we used to be able to look at Stanford and say, they're going to reload that defensive line. They're going to be tough, physical. There's a reason the body blow theory was about Stanford in the first place.
Right.
And they have not had that aura since 2017. Like, David Shaw is losing that benefit of the doubt to believe that he can reload his defensive lines, reload. They keep recruiting great offensive linemen, but their offensive lines are not as dominant as they used to be, and their defensive lines are not as dominant as they used to be. So there are always decent players, dangerous players, Paulson Adebo and NC Fogo, dangerous players. But the team itself has been lacking, and I think it all comes down to what happened to that defensive front, that front seven, that it didn't matter who was playing. You just knew Stanford's going to be a problem in that area.
What are you pointing to? Is it Derek Mason no longer being part of Stanford's coaching staff?
Natural attrition from you know, Derek Mason not being there.
Okay, here's a question. Did the coaching staff under Harbaugh, has it reached a terminal state similar to what happened with Pete Carroll?
That's exactly what I was about to say.
Like, just the brain drain to where all that's left is David Shaw. And David Shaw is a great coach, but he can't necessarily do it all himself.
Yeah, so Lance Anderson has been the DC for 8 seasons. Tavita Pritchard has been the OC for 4 seasons.
Yeah, but I don't think Pritchard is someone to write home about.
Right, exactly.
As an OC.
Yeah, and Lance Anderson, at this point, I see a lot of brain drain. That's what I see. I see a lot of brain drain. I see a lot of, okay, what are they now? And it might be the remnants of the Harbaugh era just sort of being gone. It might be that Stanford was never built to be a contender, and they overachieved for a long time.
And that's probably the reality of it, is that David Shaw was a wizard in how he was able to get the maximum out of these teams. And now Stanford is probably about where they should be, which is a good team on their day, inconsistent. But this is the Stanford of really forever, with the exception of the peaks and the valleys that go beyond that. This middling Stanford is what Stanford football is for the most part. So, yeah, maybe this is what the reality is for David Shaw and company. But to pull it back to this year, let's talk about the cornerback situation. It was a battle between Tanner McKee and Jack West, 2 5-star quarterbacks going to Stanford, just like they always get 5-star quarterbacks. And Jack West won the battle. He got the start in week one against Kansas State, but it did not go so well. He was 8 of 12, threw 2 picks for only 76 yards, and was pulled at halftime. down 14-0 to Kansas State. Tanner McKee comes in and goes 15 of 18 for 118 yards in the second half. Does throw a touchdown pass, but cannot will the Cardinal to a comeback victory. Nonetheless, he is going to get the start. David Shaw is confirmed on Saturday night. So this is a weird scenario because you'd have to think that Tanner McKee having that success, getting the confidence from week one, going into week two, feels like Stanford should be able to move the ball a little bit better. This is still an offense that is trying to work out all of the misconceptions from, or all the misses from last year, right? The losing Davis Mills, losing Fajoco, losing a couple starters on the offensive line. Like, I just don't know what to make of Stanford with or without McKee.
Well, it's impossible to make anything of Stanford because Stanford in week one is the biggest, just don't pay any attention to Stanford in week one. Stanford in week one is always worse than Stanford ends up being in the season. Stanford in week one is the ultimate like teaser of, oh, they actually aren't that good. And then suddenly in week two, it's like, no, we're actually going to give USC a game now. So it's hard to know what to expect of this Stanford team because A, I don't trust their week one performance. And B, we don't know enough about any of these players at this point in real life action. Tanner McKee does better in the second half than Jack West, but it's not like he revolutionized what Stanford was doing on offense. He scored one touchdown. They still lost 24-7. They still got outscored in the second half. So does that mean anything? Does that mean that he's suddenly going to flip the switch and Stanford's offense is going to be formidable? I don't know. I don't think so. But at the same time, who knows? Because Stanford, you never know what you're getting out of them coming out of week one. The real question that I have when it comes to this game, because I have a certain amount of confidence in USC's defense, especially against a team where it's a little bit like San Jose State, where I'm not sure who's going to hurt you. Like, who's the guy that's going to hurt you on this offense? Tremaine had five catches for 32. Bryson Tremaine had five catches, 62 yards against Kansas State. They have tight ends.
Pick one of the tight ends, but it's an interesting kind of transition for the Stanford tight ends because there isn't that one dude that you're overly afraid of, right? There's not a Levine Toilolo here. There's not a Zach Ertz, but you would be stupid to think that there couldn't be, right?
No, because they're always
There is Benjamin Jurasek. Like, those guys should be involved. Jurasek had a few catches in week one against K-State, so don't sleep on those guys.
You never sleep on Stanford. But I am asking the question: like, is this San Jose State part two? In the sense that if USC's defense just recreates what they did against San Jose State, they're not going to give up the big play. And if they don't give up the big play, they're not going to give a bunch of points.
Yeah, I think there's a big, thing behind that. I think you absolutely can look at that. I mean, we talked about it in the CarCast. Is San Jose State the best team USC is going to play in the first half of the season?
Well, Stanford has to prove.
It's not a crazy theory to think about.
No, because Stanford needs to prove that wrong at this point, which they should be able to because they're still a Power 5 program recruiting Power 5 players.
I wouldn't bet on the San Jose State thing being the best team.
I think if you had Stanford and San Jose State.
It's possible. It's a non-crazy opinion.
If you had Stanford play San Jose State outside of week one, I think Stanford probably beat San Jose State. But
I don't know
for sure. I'm a little bit, I couldn't say, like, I wouldn't put money on that, on that presumption, right? So It's one of those things where Stanford has to prove that assertion wrong. And I don't think they're going to necessarily do it against USC because that game's not the one that's going to determine. Like, Stanford could beat USC and then lose all the rest of their games, and it would not surprise me at all. It's just Stanford and USC have this thing going on.
Right.
But in order for Stanford to beat USC, they have to put points on the board. And maybe Tanner McKee is the difference. Maybe he's more of a danger than Nick Starkle, maybe. he's more talented than Nick Starkle, can we say? Less experienced, but more talented?
Yeah, that's fair.
So maybe that's the thing that makes the difference. But at the same time, Stanford gave up, you know, 4 sacks. I mean, we're going to talk about this a little bit more in over-under, but like Stanford's offensive line was not exactly in control of that game.
Right.
So, and there's a reason they lost. So I don't see enough from Stanford's offense to suggest that that's where USC is going to lose the game. So you flip it back around on defense and it's a very nondescript Stanford defense. Like, yeah, is there someone on this defense that you look at and think they're the next Paul Sanadivo?
No.
Is there Stanford had a run of producing really strong linebackers for a while.
Right.
Well,
Thomas Booker
is good.
But could be the guy on the defensive line, but even last year, he only had 3 tackles for loss in the sack.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know what to make of Stanford. To the point where my imposter syndrome is like throbbing just talking about this, because I'm like, we sound so stupid talking about a Stanford team that we don't know because we don't know them.
Okay, so
because you never know what Stanford is, but okay, that's just the reality of the situation.
Something I like to do is I like to go to do you know Our Lads?
No.
Okay. Ourlads.com, they do, it's like NFL scouting kind of stuff. But why I go there is because they do depth charts. Okay. And like they do a pretty good job of like guessing at depth charts. They're not always right, but like when you look at their USC depth chart every year before anything official is out, they pretty much have their pieces in order. You can kind of trust that they've done their research. So one of the things that they do is the depth chart, and then it's color coded. So the color coding is like, this is a player that could go in the early round. You pull up the USC page for Our Lads and it's loading. But you see, so like Taj Washington, Malcolm X, Joseph Manjack, they're sort of, those are the graduate transfers, but Keaton Slovis gets the sort of purple, like he's potentially a first round pick. Isaiah Plumau gets the sort of middle rounds. USC's roster looks color coded. Like there are different colors going on that are telling you something about this roster.
Right. There's talent there. Yeah.
You go to Stanford's and it is very one note. They're all just listed. There is one guy getting color coded there are actually two guys getting color coded in their starting 22, and it's Thomas Booker.
Yeah,
and that's it.
The irony is that you look at the 24/7 sports talent composite, they're still 24th in the country.
Outside linebacker Jordan Fox is getting a gray, which means he's a potential undrafted free agent camp guy.
Well, there you go.
Literally everyone else is no. They don't have grad transfers. They don't have like, and I don't know if this is just like a failure of Our Lads maybe isn't doing like the deep dive in Stanford, and so they're not like showing all, but it just goes to show this is a very meh roster. And I'm trying not to fall back on like meh as a thing as right. often as I have in the past, but
at least here's the thing. There is this thing about USC football where every time we go into an episode like this, where we're like, I just don't know what to make of this team. I don't know who they are. I don't know who they have that's going to beat SC. We've been here before. Most notably, 2019 BYU. What did I say going into 2019 BYU? There was no football reason for SC to lose that game.
Yeah.
Here I am, folks, looking into this game. I don't think there's a football reason for SC to lose on Saturday. There is not. There's a reason Bill Connolly's SP Plus numbers have SC with a 94% win probability against Stanford, no less. A team, and this is an SC team that, you know, people are skeptical of, and yet 94%. And there is no football reason not to pick USC.
I'll do you one better. because there was no football reason to pick to pick BYU over USC, except that USC was at BYU and USC's bad on the road. Like, yeah, USC's at home this time. So there's no football or non-football reason to pick.
No, there is, though. But let me walk it down. So the football reasons why USC win this game. It's at home. They have throttled Stanford the last two times at the Coliseum, mm-hmm. including Stanford being the team in which SC scored 42 unanswered points, with Keaton Slovis making his first start 2 years ago. It was his first start 2 years ago at the Coliseum. A game in which Slovis was incredible. He threw for 330-something yards, a few touchdowns, was perfect, right? 2017, that offensive explosion against Stanford as well. This is a Stanford defense that is not infallible. I think they were 10th last year in yards per play allowed in the conference. Their offense is middling. They were 5th last year in yards per play in the conference and seemingly are only going backwards, including breaking in a new quarterback in Tanner McKee and losing a significant amount of their production. This is a USC defense that seemingly is pretty damn good. They looked really good in week one. They looked really good last year. They got a lot of pressure. They didn't create any sacks last week, but they created a lot of pressure and a lot of errant throws from Nick Starkel because of it. He barely completed more than 50% of his passes, in part because of the pressure that SC amassed. Stanford just gave up 4 sacks to K-State. There is no reason to pick Stanford on those grounds. SC is despite their struggles, is a good enough team to more than beat Stanford, especially when you look at the line, 17.5 points. We're going to talk about that more. But all of these things, those are the football reasons. What are the non-football reasons? It's Stanford in week two. It's Stanford in week two coming off a game in which they fell flat on their face and embarrassed themselves at 9 a.m. We've seen this before. It's Stanford in week two in which they're making a quarterback change. Yes, 2 years ago, they made the quarterback change from Costello, who was hurt in week one against Northwestern, and then they plug in Davis Mills, making a spot start in week two. Remember we talked about QB2 electric boogaloo?
Mm-hmm.
Slovis against Mills? All those things, the non-football reasons. Stanford has a little bit of mojo, even though Stanford lost that QB2 game.
Yeah.
There's mystique. I'm just saying, there's mystique in...
There's mystique you that doubt USC
Stanford,
gives,
and that's when Stanford beats you.
There's mystique that USC gives Stanford, because realistically, I mean, just think
on,
about it.
Hold on. Like, elephant in the room, SC barely squeaked out... it was 13-7 in the fourth quarter until there was a pick six, a late garbage touchdown. Like, SC was not at risk of losing last week, but yet they were.
Well, SC's offense responded to San Jose State driving down the field to start the third quarter by kicking a field goal. Like, that's how USC's offense responded. So, again, USC creates the mystique that we give to Stanford here. Realistically, the line for this game is 17 points in favor of USC. Do you know what the line for Ohio State Oregon is?
I think it's 14.
Yeah. Very good Oregon team going to Ohio State to play Ohio State. Ohio State team that lost everybody from last season too, struggled against Minnesota in week one, and yet they're still favored by 14. That's because Ohio State is dependable to a point. USC is only a 17-point favorite over Stanford because they're not dependable. This should be a 24-point line. This should be a no question USC is going to spank Stanford all over the park. But it's not, because you can't trust USC. And that's why that's the non-football reason / football reason to be questionable about USC here, is because you can't trust USC. It has everything to do with USC and very little to do with Stanford.
Yeah. So let's get an over-under. I'm talking about this game a little bit more, because who knows who you can trust?
So you're going over.
I'm feeling bold. Give me that over.
I'll go under. I got to take an under here. I got three unders to take.
I'm going to do an under here.
All right, Alicia, let's get into over-under for week two, USC and Stanford. I won over-under last week. 7-3 was my record. 5-5 was yours. What's your first over-under of the week?
All right, and this goes along with what I talked about earlier. 3.5 sacks for USC. USC had zero against San Jose State, but you and I both agree that the pressure was good. It wasn't for lack of trying, and they did unnerve the quarterback. Stanford gave up four sacks to Kansas State in that opener. USC has a better pass rush than Kansas State. I don't think I am being unreasonable for saying that. So will USC at least match Kansas State in their sack total?
So I feel like 3.5 is a big line for a sack total line. I think I will always take the under on that. But there's part of me that's like, come on, SC is due. They didn't get to Starkle in week one. McKee, not as...
Young quarterbacks take sacks.
This is true. McKee, not as nimble as Starkle, even though Starkle isn't that nimble either. I'm feeling bold. Give me the over.
Okay. Well, okay, what's yours?
Real bold, I know. Mine, first one. USC, 5.4 sack-adjusted yards per carry. This is just, what's your yards per carry if you just take out the sacks? 5.4 yards per carry, over, under. That's what it was last week against San Jose State, 5.4.
I got burned by taking the under on a rushing total last week, but I'm going to do it again just because I think that USC, the chances of them actually being the rushing team that they looked like against San Jose State, I got to take the under. I'm just taking the under always.
Good with me. K-State averaged 6.5 yards per carry last week. Mind you, that was buoyed by a big long run they had to score their second TD. What's your next over under?
All right, we got 9.5 points allowed by USC's defense. So Stanford only scored 7 against Kansas State. USC allowed single digits for the first time since 2016. 57 games, USC had not allowed single digits. So this is set up for USC to repeat, to get a streak going on the single digit scoring. Will they do it?
I would not be surprised if SC held Stanford to 7 points or less, or even in this over-under, 9 points or less. But I got to take the over here.
Yeah, I think just knowing the way that football goes, it's kind of hard for teams not to score at a certain point in a game. But I'm okay with taking the under. I think USC's defense got this.
All right, my next one. Over under 3.5 targets. Targets, not catches, targets. For USC wide receivers not named London or Washington. I guess they're really not named after a major world capital.
Just need to bring in a Paris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A New Delhi?
Yeah. Yeah. Is there a...
A Singapore.
Is there a city named Ford? Or a city named Bryant? I'm sure there is.
I feel like there's got to be like a Ford, Nebraska somewhere.
Yeah, there's definitely a Ford, Nebraska.
There's a Dodge City. There's got to be a Ford.
There's a Ford, Nebraska, and there's a Bryant, Iowa, or something like that. You just know it.
It's got to be.
Okay. I will go with over, because Gary Bryant Jr. will account for at least 3 of those targets.
Okay. I respect it. I think you're probably right. We'll see how that comes to fruition. 3.5 targets was the line. Next one is your last one. What is it?
1.5 USC red zone trips without a touchdown. We have talked about USC's red zone troubles. Part of the problem with setting this line is how often will USC get into the red zone in the first place?
Oh, Alicia.
I don't know. I put 1.5. I just...
Are you just wanting to give me this non-real currency that we play with in this podcast?
Perhaps.
Over. Lock it up.
Okay. That's red zone trips without a touchdown.
Moving on, my last one, 59.5 plays for Stanford. Why is this important? Because Stanford averaged 59.5 plays against USC in their last 4 games against the Trojans. That dates back to 2016. That's 4 games. It's also notable because Stanford averaged 70 plays per game last year, and you think, well, why would you set the line at 59.5? Because the Cardinal had 52 against K-State. K-State only had 45 last week. The 52 was the fewest for Stanford in a game since 51 that they had against Pitt in the 2018 Sun Bowl. There was a tweet from Ryan McChrystal from Sharp Football that said Stanford's offense ran a play once every 37.9 seconds on Saturday while trailing the entire game.
Yikes. Yikes.
Over under 59.5 plays for Stanford.
Okay, so San Jose State had 65 plays against USC, and they were coming off a game, granted, against FCS Southern Utah that they blew them out, where they had 53 plays. So I'm going to go with the over, mostly because I think USC's defense is the type that's going to give you plays here and there, but ultimately stop you down the line. I don't know that this defense is going to get a ton of three and outs. So, yeah, I'll go over.
All right, that locks me into the under. That's going to be it for over-under. Let's get into game predictions. Bill Connolly's metrics over at ESPN with the SP Plus. He's predicting USC to win 43-16 with a win probability of 94% for the Trojans. The win in Vegas says USC by 17.5. That is the line. Alicia, what's your game prediction?
Poor Bill Connolly. His numbers love USC's offense. I think USC ranks 7th nationally in offense. That's because Bill Connolly's numbers don't understand that USC's offense is not nearly as good as they are on paper. So they ain't scoring 43. Famous last words. I know. Clip that. Whatever. I'm going USC 27 because it will be deeply disappointing, but Stanford is also deeply disappointing. Stanford 15. I'm betting against myself on that over-under. USC wins by 12, just comfortable enough that we get to have the same arguments as we had last week about it was okay, but it wasn't okay, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Can't wait for that car cast. my prediction, remember, folks, there is no football reason for USC to lose this game.
He's just asking for the upset, guys.
And so I'm going to pick SC. I picked SC in the preview. The season predictions episode, I'm sticking with it. I wouldn't be shocked if Stanford got the win here because football. Let's say SC 34-13.
Okay.
Not saying it's going to be a pretty 34-13.
No, I would not dream of it.
But, nope. But a 34-13.
USC can win by 23 points again, and I guarantee you it won't be pretty. That's just not this team's MO.
We'll see. They won by 25 points last time.
Yeah.
And that was real pretty.
Mm.
Last time against Stanford, 2019. So, all right. We got a really short mailbag, so let's get to that to wrap this thing up.
You've got mail.
All right, Alicia, let's go to a voicemail we got from Scott in Memphis.
Hey, Michael, Alicia, this is Scott from Memphis, Tennessee, and giving you a call. Watched the game. I thought kind of the same things that you touched on with the car cast about exactly the same thing. So, I'm worried about Stanford because they lost, not because they won or they look good. It's because of the fact that they're going to be coming in and trying to prove something. I want to get your thoughts on that. And also, I was concerned about the fact that UCLA looks so good. And my concern is the fact that if Chip Kelly is turning UCLA around, I know you touched upon it for a moment, your car cast when you were watching the game while you were doing it. And LSU may be questionable. So that may be the only thing that we can hope for, because we definitely don't want little brother to start to think they can do something great. Anyway, get your thoughts on that and welcome back. I was getting a little worried about you two. I hadn't posted much in the Reign of Troy, and frankly, I was worried that you were above ground or not, but good to hear from you and look forward to hearing from your thoughts. Take care. Bye.
Thanks so much, Scott. Nice to hear from you. And yeah, we're doing okay. We just had to take an impromptu summer break because life got in the way. And life and work and all that kind of stuff. But Yeah, I was nodding along as you were talking about how you're scared of Stanford because they lost. That is exactly Stanford MO, to come out in week one looking slow and then challenge USC in week two. They're always better than they are in week one. They figure things out to a point. But again, the Stanford team, it's just diminishing returns from Stanford. So are they as scary as they've been in the past? I don't think you can look at this team and think they are. As I said before, USC is the issue here. If USC doesn't win this game, it's because USC is the issue. So is that comforting at all? No, I don't think that's comforting at all. But it is what it is. As for LSU, I think Michael and I are both on the record. We don't think LSU is all that good, but good on UCLA for coming to play in that game. Like, I think the thing you have to worry about with UCLA is just that they're starting to beat the teams that they should. And they haven't done that under Chip Kelly necessarily consistently.
I have a question. If LSU was the same exact team, but they were wearing Mississippi State jerseys, how would people feel about that UCLA team right now?
It would still be a Mississippi State team that won the national title as...
No. We're not talking about... Just like, they're the exact same team, but they're just wearing Mississippi State jerseys.
Oh, no. But the context of the 2019 title is the only thing that's keeping LSU afloat right now.
That's the point. I'm removing that.
Yeah, in that case, no. No one would think it was that big of a deal.
That's what I'm saying.
No, yeah.
Yeah. UCLA should have won last week. They won by, 11 points? It wasn't the dominant win. It was a good win for them and a win that they needed and good for them. I think they were really good last year.
I think UCLA is starting to look like the team that UCLA should have been this entire time, which is not to say that they're an actual contender in the Pac-12. They still have to prove that. But like,
absolutely formidable.
They should absolutely have been involved in the Pac-12 South title challenge. They're
absolutely.
In the last few years. They should always be up in that conversation. And that's what they look like now.
Yeah. They're absolutely in the tier with SC, Utah, and ASU.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a four-horse race in the South, which should be fun.
Yes.
So 100%. But again, tell me about that LSU game if they were wearing Mississippi State jerseys. I feel like people wouldn't be as hyped as they are on UCLA.
Yeah.
And I say this as a proponent. I like this UCLA team. Like, I really do. Like, I
Your argument has always been, like, UCLA was good last year. Why are we just figuring this out?
That's what I'm saying. Yes, that's what I'm saying. We got a tweet from Joe who says, great recap episode, but I got a couple thoughts. Number one, if Cliff Kingsbury had a realistic buyout, would the Arizona Cardinals have paid it? Yes. Yeah. The problem with Lynn Swann and the buyout thing with Cliff Kingsbury wasn't that there was a buyout. It wasn't that the buyout would have deterred what happened. It was that SC just didn't get as much compensation as they could have gotten.
Yeah,
they should have. It should have been that if you want to go get Cliff Kingsbury so quickly and make him turn his back on his new commitment to USC, you've got to pay through the nose for it.
You got to pay for the first year of our next offensive coordinator, who we can now throw $500,000 at. Like,
and if you're the Arizona Cardinals, if you want a head coach,
yeah, you pay that.
You pay that.
Yeah. Yes. The Cardinals wanted Cliff. That's what screwed USC. The Cardinals really wanted Cliff. Were they wise about that? Who knows? But they really wanted him. And that's the one thing that's happened to USC that I feel like they had very little control over. And I don't blame USC for what happened there.
Yeah, me neither. Joe, second question. Graham Harrell is an average OC at best at the Power 5 level. No innovation. Play 1 doesn't set up play 2, etc. He has not matured as a play caller, as Clay Helton offers nothing. Keaton Slovis is still locked on one wide receiver.
Yeah, USC hired Graham Harrell as Cliff Kingsbury light, hoping that he would develop into something. Harrell is driving a car that is more valuable than he should be allowed to drive at his age and experience level. That's it.
And the problem for SC is, like,
And the problem for SC is that they have a coach who got a job that he was not qualified for and shouldn't have been handed the keys to that particular car.
Right.
And then he turned around and handed the other Ferrari to two successive offensive coordinators who didn't have...
If you're going to give a Ferrari to anyone, you give it to someone like Carlos Sainz, who has at least cut his teeth at a few teams.
Exactly. You don't stick Nikita Mazepin in
a Ferrari.
Or even Mick Schumacher. You don't stick Mick Schumacher in the Ferrari straight away. You got to send him to Haas and have him cut his teeth at Haas.
Right.
USC has not figured that out.
This is true.
There you go.
All right. There's your F1 analogy for the day. And with that, it looks like we've run out of time for the hangers discussion again.
Oh, shucks.
Damn. All right. If you really want the hangers discussion... Let us know, and we'll see if we can squeeze it in.
We'll do a whole hangers episode.
We might.
Yeah.
We might have to do that. But yeah, that's going to wrap up this preview. USC and Stanford locking horns at the Coliseum. Saturday night, 7:30 p.m. Pac-12 after dark. That's going to wrap this thing up. Alicia, you got a final word?
The final word is Watt. As in, J.J. Watt just made a lot of money.
What's the details?
I don't know. He's the highest paid defensive player in the NFL.
Even though he was like good like 4 years ago?
Not J.J. Watt, T.J. Watt.
Oh, you said J.J.
Did I say J.J.? No,
you
I said T.J.
I'm okay, like, here what? We go.
He signed a 4-year extension worth $112 million, averaging $28 million per year with $80 million guaranteed.
Yikes. So he's incredible. See, me and Madden wouldn't make that.
Yeah.
Cash-only deals from me, baby.
80 million guaranteed sounds pretty darn nice.
Yeah. All right. Until then, we'll see you.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.